Hi, Dominique, and welcome to another edition of The Week Ahead. As always, I feel like our videos are quite exciting. There's a lot going on, but generally in the markets, data and kind of some of your views as well, certainly getting a lot of kind of discussion. And I want to thank all the people, several clients and actually new trialers reached out saying how much they enjoy our weekly calls, which is great. And really like how we're kind of breaking down your views and putting a bit more kind of depth from just obviously the publications as well and the kind of question answer format. So that's great to hear. Yeah, as we always like to start off, let's do the current week or the prior couple of days. And obviously so there's some big data points. You kind of reinforce your view, and I really like how you break down percentages of kind of expected moves by the Fed in March, which I think as kind of a former derivative trader, that makes a lot of sense and really kind of easy to digest. Obviously, CPI, PPI, market reaction. So let's kind of dive right in. What were your big takeaways from the past week?
That basically the call is still on track. I mean, I've trimmed down my probability of a 50 basis point cut, but that was after the CPI, but still the best case scenario on balance. I mean, obviously, I don't want to project certainty when, you know, there isn't a lot of it, but based on available information, yeah, I mean, it looks like after the PPI, PC is going to track below 20 basis points. So we're going to have a core PC that probably moves further away from the Fed target. And that's really, you know, there are really three reasons for the call. Number one, in the past, inflation has been either high or low, below 2%, and the fall in energy prices that we are having, and despite the Houthi, in fact, Viresh explains that the Houthi attacks would have a step impact on oil prices, but that's it, no, not enough to provoke a rally. So, you know, we have a market that's likely to be oversupplied this year. So energy prices are pulling us down towards a low inflation equilibrium. So that's the first part, the first reason for the call. Then you have the Fed, you know, that thinks it can control inflation and never gave up on controlling inflation. So if they see core PC further moving further away of their target, they are going to react. And the third driver of the call is that they will come in early, they will come in hard, and they also want to stay away of our mess of electoral calendar. And so, yeah, so overall, between, you know, the details of the CPI and the PPI, I see no reason to change the call, maybe trim a little bit to, you know, pay respect to the data showing that CPI inflation is not slowing. But again, you know, this is about being in sync with the Fed. They are looking at PC much more than CPI. The CPI data seems to imply a low PC print. So that's where we are.
Okay. And then, okay, so the Fed's just reconfirming, so the Fed's preferred indicator for inflation is core PCE. And why is there a significant difference between core PCE and core CPI? And has that
lots of reasons.
Unique period in time? Or is it always a difference?
Lots of reasons, different weights, also a different type of index. The PC index allows for substitution between goods.
I remember
you said that. While the CPI does not. So typically the PC is below the CPI, and it looks like in December it could be significantly below the CPI. I mean, obviously we are talking in probabilities here. The data is noisy. There is a bit of randomness, but based on the hard numbers currently available, looks like PC is not going to make the Fed happy.
Oh, like concern in like it's actually now starting to look
Too
too
low.
low. Yeah. Yeah, that was a really interesting. I mean, I was having a discussion with Bilal saying, you initially when you started talking about your view, and obviously in the probability sense, I think a lot of clients were like, oh my gosh, so you assume like the economy is going to fall off a cliff. And that's a little bit of a kind of misnomer, correct?
100%, and that's really one of my frustration. I can't. I mean, even the Fed does not entertain the possibility of a positive supply shock, because a positive supply shock means two things. It means disinflation, prices are slowing, but it means strong growth. Like with the energy prices, the price of everything is coming off, but people have more money in their pockets. They need to spend less on filling the tank. And for some reason, you have someone like Waller who keeps saying either inflation goes down or growth goes down, but we can't have them move in opposite direction, which is exactly what a supply shock is about. So my call is not at all about recession, because that's where I agree with Powell. No, there is no sign of recession in the US. It's about the fact that the Fed doesn't like inflation below 2%, more than it likes high inflation, and they think they can, and they have to control inflation. And so, if you look at what they did before the pandemic, we had 2 decades of rock bottom rates, policy rates, because the Fed was under the illusion that they could control inflation. So they kept rate very low. They never hit the target. But the one thing they did was inflate asset prices, especially real estate asset, and made a home unaffordable for young people. So I don't think they've moved out of this frame of mind, and that's really the reason for the call, besides the fact that energy prices are falling.
Right. Okay, yeah, I wanted to unpack. So basically, goods deflation, and then obviously to your point, I think on the previous call, with all this immigration, so you now have a lot of supply for employment. So eventually that will slow wage growth as well. Now we have other things which we ourselves see is through AI and tech. It is starting for a lot of different businesses to realize they could do more with less, and that the LLM technology can reduce. Now that's going to play out over obviously over many years, and then combine that with kind of lower energy prices. Yeah, I think it's good to clarify that it's not, your view is not based on a coming recession. We still don't see that. But your view is the Fed is now as concerned about falling back into a low inflation environment, and obviously they struggled for many years to get out of that. So, okay.
And
And
never
obviously
did.
your other, sorry, just to finish, your other point is they're not really going to want to be seen doing anything, probably at least within 3 months of the election, no matter what, because good or bad, either side, like it's going to be nasty. And if the Fed gets caught in the middle of it, it's probably not great.
For sure. So in effect, they have 3 meetings to cut, really, or 4 maybe. Because January, they are not going to do
Yeah.
anything. So they have March, May, and June, maybe July, but July is cutting it short in.
I don't even think they have July because maybe it's the middle of summer, but okay, great. And then yeah, so let's go into the I guess quick on market reaction, I guess between bonds, equities, I guess the dollar. Does anything, not we've seen big moves in the dollar, but are you surprised by how yields are moving, the curve's moving. I guess vols must be starting to come down quite a bit in the rates market after this big, big move down in November, December. So I guess the market is just, they're convinced, even if it's going to be 25, that yeah, were you surprised that the market actually didn't initially price out cuts or the percentage of cuts more after CPI?
So it's really hard to read in the mind of Mr. Market. In my view, harder than reading the mind of Mr. Powell. I'm not sure. I think this supply shock story is still not in the mind of many market participants. I think people could be worried about recession, so maybe paying more attention to indicators of demands and indicators of prices. I'm not very sure what
Yeah,
is wrong, to
that's
be honest.
interesting. And I think the stuff that Bilal showed on the markets call on Wednesday will show some of our event weighting analysis on some of the dollar pairs, manufacturing numbers have significantly increased in volatility and focus as data points, which I think we still don't know if we totally agree with that. But understood. Okay, so moving.
Yeah,
Moving ahead.
I was going to say on that, all our listeners need to do is to plot industrial production against the manufacturing PMI, and you'll see that the PMI is completely out of whack with the hard data, which is a general state of affairs across surveys, whether they are consumer surveys or supply side surveys.
Yeah, I mean it's hard for market participants who have probably looked towards manufacturing PMI, as kind of like a leading indicator, kind of a like a bellwether signal for whether we're going to go into a recession or not, and it's obviously not working this time.
Definitely not.
Okay, cool.
So the fun we are having this coming week, right?
Exactly.
Okay,
Exactly.
so Fed speakers, there is on Tuesday, Monday is a holiday in the US, a speech by Waller on the economic outlook. And given the role he played in this, cutting frenzy with his late November comments that just a few more low PC print and we can start cutting, which is, I mean, he didn't quite use this language, but this is actually what he said, a few more low prints and we can start thinking about cuts. So I am very curious to hear what he has to say. So this one is on Monday. And then we also have Williams, Bostic and Daly. In terms of data, of course, the big event this week is retail sales. And to be honest, so the retail sales aggregate I look at is something called the control group because it's used to compute consumption in the GDP and also in the monthly personal income and spending. And the market, the consensus is pegged at 30 basis point, which seems a bit low in view of where the CPI was because it's the same. So it would imply no growth no real growth in sales, which I found a bit hard to believe given how strong the labor market is, how low savings rates are, the recovery in equities and so on and so forth. So here I see a small scope for upside surprise.
Okay. So upside surprise, retail sales. Okay.
Otherwise we have a slew of real estate market indicators and perhaps the more interest, so we have the NAHB index, building permits, housing start, existing home sales. Actually, to me, the more interesting one is existing home sales because we've seen about 1.5 percentage point decline in mortgage rate. And I wonder if this is not going to loosen the mortgage lock-in effect. As you know, in the US, when you sell your house and buy another one, you have to let go of your old mortgage. You can't keep it. And so people have not been putting their houses on the market because the mortgage rates they'd have to pay to buy their next house would be so much higher than what they are paying now. Since in the US, we have this 30-year fixed mortgage rate. And so one of the paradoxical results is that it has been a very sharp decline in existing home sales, a very sharp decline in vacancies, especially for owned homes. And in my views, it has been a key factor behind the resiliency of the housing component of inflation.
Right. And I
So
guess the
I would
secondary effect is it's also probably keeps rents fairly high because it's
for
also
sure.
limiting supply. Yeah.
No, definitely. So what I'm wondering is whether we could see existing home sales bottoming out because people are now more comfortable selling their house and buying another one. And if this could lead to an increase in vacancies and help to slow down the decline, help to slow down the increase in house in rents, in housing costs. I have a chart on that in my CPI review, actually. It's really funny. You see rents going up with mortgage rates. Who would have thought? So we'll see. So this one I'm looking at. Otherwise, we have the usual manufacturing surveys, but as I've just said, there's little linkage between the surveys and the hard data. We have the University of Michigan Consumer Confidence Survey, small decline, but the trend is up. That survey correlates the most with purchases of durable goods. That they've been doing well. And even though the consensus expects a small decline, you can see that even with this decline, the trend is up. So overall, I think the data could support expectation of strong growth ne next
Okay.
week.
Okay, great. And congratulations to all of the University of Michigan fans, by the way, because they won the national title.
Okay.
It's in college American football.
I was going to ask title of what, but then I'd be afraid of
And
being
hopefully
bold.
Harbaugh will join my favorite team, the San Diego or Los Angeles Chargers, as their
Ah,
head coach next year. But
maybe.
small American football note, coming from London. So, one interesting thing is, for all the pushback you've had, I mean, you're making a very out of consensus call on this 50 basis point. We all agree. You put a percentage on it, and you're putting yourself out there. For all the pushback, I'm just looking like what's priced in. Like, we're already priced in like just over 50 basis points of cuts by May. So like, and now it's like 21 and a half for June. Like, I don't know, you could be right.
Stranger things have happened. But the bottom line, no, but really the essence of the call is inflation is a new in the US is never 2%, as the Fed tells us it will be over the next few years. It's either below 2% or high, which is consistent with a sort of regime view of inflation of the BIS, which is really my favorite inflation model. So you have that. You have the Fed still, in my view, under the illusion that they can control inflation and prepared to throw everything they have at it. And also, to be fair to them, from their perspective, if they end up with below 2% inflation, they won't look good either. So, from their perspective, it's internally consistent to fight it. And then you have the most contentious election, perhaps in US history, at least since World War II. So all those things to me suggest a lot of cuts in H1.
Awesome. Very interesting. I'll
Oh, just a
quickly.
word, a word on the government funding. I
Oh,
mean,
yeah.
it expires on Friday. We are getting the usual theatrics. Also, poor Speaker Johnson has to deal with the very extreme members of his party who are out to make a name for themselves rather than
Which he used
supporting
to
the
be part
party.
of, but
It's just,
clearly now.
so not impossible that we have a few hours, perhaps even a day of partial shutdown at the end of the week. But I'm still of the view that we get nothing really disruptive.
Yeah, it's interesting. I saw Jamie Dimon was commenting, I guess, as JP Morgan's earnings were released earlier today. So again, timestamp, this is Friday, London afternoon, New York morning and mid-morning, saying, sees inflation still sticky as long as, the government continues to spend the way it has and is continuing to do. So it would be interesting if inflation did look like it's actually starting to, that we are entering this low inflation regime, or certainly the threat of it, even with the government still spending as much as they are. So quickly go through some of the, for our pro clients, some of the main stuff in the past week. The US, well, one, obviously we had the CPI model, which was great. Actually, it was pretty close to being bang on, which was great for those people saw that. The developed market
It was bang
rates,
on.
yeah, I think it was bang on. So we have the PCA, developed market rates, PCA model. That's out. Actually, that was up today. Global rates, the global rates weekly, that's also out with two new trades for everybody. There's the kind of revamped, which has been really getting some great feedback. And now I'm listening to kind of all the evolution, or the strategy of how it's going to even continue to get even better, which is the FX weekly. Which Bilal is also very active along with Mirza and Ben and Richard. And then usual stuff around emerging markets, the, a lot of super interesting stuff. And again, for people who absolutely recommend for our clients to check out the weekly markets call that Bilal does, where it's now this question and answer kind of format. And for me, I think it's great. I really enjoy it. This past week particularly was a great one. So in addition to kind of, if you like our videos, it's also a great thing to look at.
Yeah, we
Dominic, I
get
don't know.
grilled by Bilal, and he's really good at it.
Of course, yes.
And then clients have the opportunity to, throw in their own questions.
100%. That's a great point. That clients really like, if there's stuff you want, instead of like a monthly or whatever calls we looked at doing before, yeah, question answer, an opportunity to ask questions whenever you want, and especially to get it answered on the markets call. And with that, I'll, yeah, any parting words for everyone for the weekend, or?
Well, I hope everybody in the US enjoys their long weekend. Thank you for listening, sending the feedback, negative feedback, especially helpful. And good luck, everybody.
Great, great. And yeah, thank you so much. Thank you, Dominique. Thank you, everyone, for watching, and good luck.